Hey everybody, Stu Smith here going live. Hope you are doing well on this Monday morning, Cyber Monday morning. And we have been working all through the week from Black Friday to Cyber Monday. How many of you guys enjoyed that football game on Black Friday though? That was clutch. Yes, I do have a coupon code for you. If you are listening and want to save 25% off of items at stusmithfitness.com, you can use the BlackFry25. So BlackFry25. I'll type it into the comment section so you can use that for any items on stusmithfitness.com. So check that out. All right. So what we're going to talk about today is I wrote an article this morning. That's why I'm starting a little bit early because I crushed this thing. Just flowed quite smoothly today. And the reason why I'm excited about this one is because a study came out just this year or maybe even last month, as early as last month, about endurance cycles before a strength cycle. So what that means is something I've been doing for over, 30 years now almost, is I do a calisthenics and cardio cycle in the summer, which is really muscle stamina and endurance. And then I do a winter lift cycle. And I have noticed that when I really go into this winter lift cycle, I put on a lot of mass. And I just thought it was maybe just me that, I look at weights, I put on mass, type of mentality. So I've always had to kind of moderate my lifting during the lift cycle if I did not want to put on too much mass, because I'm at an age right now where, be quite honest with you, I don't care if I weigh 220 and can deadlift a truck. I would rather be healthier and lighter and, back into my pre-buds weight, which was about 195. And still strong, but still capable of running and doing high rep calisthenics and things like that. This study kind of proved some interesting, an interesting fact that people who did a little cardio for like 4 to 6 weeks prior to a 12-week lift cycle, that they added more strength and muscle mass in that cycle. Now, I will tell you this, my hypothesis or theory behind this is that when you are working on some higher volume resistance training like calisthenics and running or swimming or whatever cardio you want to add to that, you are getting in better shape. You're able to handle more volume when you're lifting in that next phase. You're not as tired. You don't need to recover as much. So you're able to get some more sets in that you may not have normally been able to do. So you're able to lift more and more often. So anyway, this study kind of shows that. It was kind of neat. I put the link to the study in the description, and you can find it up on PubMed, but it is called, if you're really interested, the title of it is Short-Term Aerobic Conditioning Prior to Resistance Training Augments Muscle Hypertrophy and Satellite Cell Content in Healthy Young Men and Women. So it's on PubMed, and in fact, I'll put the link to it. If you like reading these things, I personally like reading these things and see how they apply to my life, and well as my folks that I train. Let's take some questions, see how you guys are doing. I got a whole bunch of questions that were asked separately from you guys that I may, if it's a, there's a little lull in there, I may answer some of these because they're pretty good and they're pretty pretty universal for people wanting to go into spec ops at any age. So everybody, hey, Alex, Linda, Cole, good morning to you guys. All your latest articles on the CSS have been very helpful. Thank you for providing us all these this information. I got an idea for the CSS, and I was going to talk about it tomorrow a little more in depth, but I came up with a series of articles titled CSS Help, and I broke down the whole process of the CSS. So CSS Help, fix my kick. CSS Help, fix my glide. CSS Help, fix my arm pulls. CSS Help, the sequence, pull, breathe, kick, glide. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, pull, breathe, kick, glide, you know, sequence of the stroke. And I posted those all on a single web page. And it's basically my CSS one-stop shop page, kind of a master page for CSS articles and videos that I've created over the years. I'll put it in here for you guys. You guys can check this out. But this is everything I've ever written on the CSS, as well as links to all my videos I've ever made on the CSS, whether I posted them on YouTube or Instagram Reels or TikTok, they're out there. And it's all on this one page to help you, you know, just better understand what the CSS is, why we even use it, you know, a little bit of history of it and all of that. So Tristan, good morning. Starting a swim focus block tomorrow. Going to do your Air Force 100-100 workout. I love that one. That's a great one. If you haven't seen that one, it's a good one. Not sure if my pool allows underwaters. If they stop me, I'll just do hypoxic freeze. Yes, I would do that. Just do freestyle no breaths if they stop you doing from underwater swims. You're only doing a length across the pool. And I'll be honest with you, chances are if you do a lot of these, you're probably not going to be able to do them fully without coming up for a breath. So my advice is this: kick off the wall on your first few, come up about halfway, take a breath, go back under, finish the stroke. Because really the goal is not necessarily how long you can hold your breath. It's you working the total arm pull of the underwater stroke, holding that glide for a little bit, kicking and recovering and holding that glide for a little bit. So the underwater stroke I want you to really practice is pull glide, kick glide, and get in that streamlined glide position, you know, and see if you can get across a 25-yard or 25-meter pool in about four strokes with a kickoff, with a kickoff the wall. There's no reason why you can't if you glide properly. It's all about the glide. But yeah, that's a wise idea. Does the Mississippi count on the CSS with fins for the same? No, not really. I've never used it like that. Basically, you're in this position, flutter kicking, until you need to breathe, and then you use your arms to breathe and get back in and constantly flutter kick again. So I try to get in a rhythm of getting in this position, kick, 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 time to breathe, kick, 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 time to breathe. So I usually get one, two, three kicks, ready to come up to breathe. Sometimes I'll get four, but that is how you do it with fins. It is not the same as without fins, because here's the one thing with fins, it's best to stay on your side the whole time. Whereas without fins, if you wanted to roll over during the glide you could, and then start that arm pull like a freestyle catch. Also wanted to ask you if I find it hard to hold my streamline during swimming, mid-swimming, that meaning I'm hardly squeezing my ears with my biceps due to feeling like soreness in my shoulders. Is that a mobility issue? Yes, it is a mobility issue. In fact, that underwater video I showed the other day had the guy kick off the wall, and he was like this at first. And then by the time he got to me, he got like this, right? And it's real easy to get there in that flat, straight position at first. But, you know, if you're not used to it, your body's going to want to go back to what's kind of normal for you. And that's a shoulder mobility, upper back strength issue. So a lot of the PT reset exercises we do, like, you know, like reverse flies, like stretching your chest, hand release, push-ups, birds, arm haulers, you know, all of these while laying on your belly will help you work those upper back muscles to keep your shoulders back when you're in that glide position. So yeah, it's a shoulder mobility issue, but it's also a muscle imbalance issue. A lot of us are strong on the front, but weak on the back, just the way it is. We all like to work the front of our bodies. We tend to neglect the back of our bodies, you know, by doing pull-ups or, you know, reverse flies and rows and things like that. I have a question about push-ups in the PST. Does your chest need to touch the ground? That's all. That's the way I've been training, but a lot of people go down about 6 inches and then back up. I'm not sure where you're measuring that 6 inches from, but you need to be, it's not a bad thing to practice chest to ground because it's going to make the actual fitness test easier because the way they grade it is they used to grade it with a fist flat on the ground like this. So what's that? 2 inches off the ground. I've even seen them grade it like this, which is probably about 4 inches off the ground. So they grade it like this. They used to, but now at least during COVID, they didn't want people face to face doing the test, which, okay, I get it. So what they do now is they measure a 90-degree angle with the elbow. So when your elbow comes up, you know, it's got to produce a 90-degree angle, right? And then zero, 90, zero, 90, zero. So if you don't go all the way down, you're not going to produce that 90-degree angle, which will count as a zero rep. So practice both. I think for your workouts, go all the way down, all the way up. I think that's just good range of motion training. However, during your fitness test, you're going to want to practice some coming off the ground a couple of inches too. All right, looks like I have answered all those questions. Got a couple more that I found on email. It seems like the enlisted route is best for me. Do you agree? This guy was like a 29, almost 30-year-old college grad. You know, it's got good PST scores, stuff like that. So if you're 30 years old, you really have two options. With a college degree, you can try for the SOAS slot. Yes, you may need an age waiver. However, I'm seeing on various recruiting pages and talking to recruiters that there is no age limit now. It's up to 40. But on the Spec War webpage, sealswick.com, it is still there, at least when I last checked a month ago. There's some gray area, right? But, you know, I've seen guys 29, 30 years old get accepted into SOAS, go crush SOAS, and then get through OCS and are at Buds at 30, 31 and have graduated. So officer or enlisted. Now, I will say this. If you're considering officer, it's going to take some time because you're not going to finish what you need to finish in December and January with your recruiter to get it submitted by February. And that's the way it works. Unless you can roll through all your medical stuff and everything that by February of 24, you're not going to be eligible for SOAS of 24. It's just the way it is. So it may add another year of you getting medically cleared and getting your letters of recommendation and interviews and all that stuff that you have to do to get accepted into SOAS program. So it takes longer. If you want to get there faster, enlistment is the fastest way. And you can do that by once you're able to crush a PST, go talk to a recruiter. And since you're older, you're going to want to show up there on day one and absolutely demolish the PST in front of everybody. And then they will take you seriously. And they'll say, all right, he's a great candidate. I'm willing to work with him if I have to do a little more administrative work to get that age waiver or whatever has to go up the chain of command in order to get him in. I'm willing to do that. You have to kind of prove yourself to those recruiters that are going to do all that extra work to get you in. So that's the faster way to go. And if you pass the PST, you get an SO contract if you medically qualify for that. And yes, you are guaranteed for a spot at Buds after boot camp, which is in Great Lakes. Now, I have seen people go to boot camp and fail the military physical there. Like they might get pinged for depth perception or color blindness or something. Either get a waiver or not be eligible to go to Buds, and they just got out of the military altogether because it's not part of their contract. They don't have to stay there. They'll recommend you, hey, do you want to do something else? And you say yes or no. It's kind of up to you how bad you want to serve in a different capacity, but you will not go to Buds if you don't pass that screening test, medical screening test at boot camp. All right, looks like we got some more questions here. Sir, how fast would you recommend push-ups and pull-ups to be done during training and during taking the test? Well, pull-ups are very likely going to be on a cadence for at least the first 8 to 10. And then after that, you get as many as you want. They just want to see 10 good ones for pull-ups. For push-ups, you know, there's no real pace for that is what I've seen over the years. I've seen people try to pace it and they just don't do as well. I will say cadence push-ups are harder than non-cadence push-ups. So what I mean by that is the Naval Academy uses cadence push-ups now for their fitness test for midshipmen. And the maximum for 2 minutes is 60, but you got to go down, up, down, down, up, and each down up is a second. So every rep, if you're going to stay on that cadence, you will get 60 in 2 minutes. Not easy. Something that you should practice. Now, if your test is not a cadence push-up, blow it out of the water fast as you can because gravity is going to slowly take those reps away. I used to do about 75 in the first minute. Just cranking, right? Just cranking nonstop. And then I would hold it for a rest for about 5 seconds, kind of wiggle a little bit, do five more. Shake it, or couldn't really shake it out anymore. So I just kind of wiggle my shoulders, you know, get five more. And the next minute, I'm able to squeeze out another 20, 25, you know, get 100 plus, able to finish it that way. That's how I've done pull-ups and push-ups over the years. And still recommend people to do it that way. I've heard recruiting is down a good bit across most military branches, does this mean there's likely to be more slots for things like SOAS and selection? No, that is not down. The main reason why recruiting is down, and I talked to my recruiters here locally just to confirm this, is because this one recruiter told me they had over 30 people wanting to join the military, and that was Navy, want to go to the military. And because of the medical review process now, because they will go into your pharmaceutical record, like what prescriptions you've been prescribed. So you might lie on any paperwork and say you don't have ADHD or been medicated for asthma, but they see it prescribed to you in your medical prescription record, and they say, why are you taking this? And you don't get in because it's disqualifying if you have taken some of those medications. So that is why it's down. In fact, the guy told me he had over 30 and he could only take one because of the MEPS screening process. So, and that just started last year or maybe a year and a half ago, and numbers have been plummeting, largely self-inflicted reasons because of that. I guarantee you, in a time of war, they will get rid of that, or they would not have done it during the last 20 years of war, because it eliminates so many recruits. Currently in the process for SOAS, about to go to MEPS this week or next. I started a process in October. I know two guys that I train with went to SOAS, got picked up, and start OCS today. Yes, that is a today. That is a today thing. That is right. Got a couple of guys ourselves that from our local groups that are starting OCS as well. Well, good luck with that, Cole. Mikhail, hope you are well. How to overcome fear of deep bodies of water and sea creatures. You know, Bob, I'll be honest with you, I have never really mastered that. First of all, when you're at Bud's, it's not the same because you always have a guy, when you're scuba diving, you have a guy tied to you. You're literally tied to your swim buddy. Sometimes it is so dark. I have no idea where my swim buddy is. I actually have to find my rope and pull him next to me and find him. And then I just kind of hang on there and we communicate through hand signals and all that. And you don't feel alone and it's not as freaky. But yeah, when you're and you always have a swim buddy with you, so it's a little less fearful, I guess, is a way to put it. But I never really gotten over it. It's not a comfortable feeling when you're swimming on the surface and you can't see the bottom or dark, murky water, or you're swimming, you're scuba diving, and there's a whole bunch of, seaweed and everything floating around you, and you're just kind of swimming through all these things that you can't see, more than a few feet in front of you. It's a little spooky. I'll be honest with you, I don't know how I got over it, but you do. Just got to keep practicing it. But it's uncomfortable. I won't lie to you. But I will say this, you do it enough and you get a little more comfortable with it. When doing CSS, could you explain what you're doing with the bottom arm after the two Mississippis? It stays out there. You need to see my new article, which is called Fix Your Arm Pulls. This will explain exactly what I'm talking about. I'm going to put this in the screen. It's my new article. In fact, it's on Stu Smith Fitness right now. fix my arm pull. So the bottom arm pull is basically a breaststroke pull. Your top arm is going to pull and push water just like freestyle. You're going to turn your head with that top arm. You're going to breathe with the bottom arm. And then you're going to kick and hold that glide out here like this. So your question is, what are you doing after the two Mississippis? You're gliding for one Mississippi, two Mississippi. Pull, you pull that top arm. You pull the bottom arm right after the top arm. So you're breathing during the bottom arm pull. You are inhaling while you pull that bottom arm. That's where the timing of the stroke matters. Do I have guys in buds now? There are guys that are at buds or SQT that have trained with me. Yes, several. Had a doctor about 3 years ago prescribe me anxiety medication during a checkup because I told him I had been more anxious than normal, never touched it, didn't need it. Is that disqualifying? It could be an issue. Something you're going to have to deal with for sure. You may not be able to answer. If not, no worries. Just wanted to ask because wasn't sure. Thanks for all the help. I've gotten in great shape with your programs. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know. It could be a big issue. You're going to have to justify that. You might have to talk to your doctor and just say, hey, I never took this. Have them write a letter. I'm not sure what you do with that, to be honest with you. It could be an issue. But if they look at it and they say you never were prescribed it again, you know, it wasn't like something you did for 10 years, you know, it may not be as big an issue as it could be. But to be honest with you, you never know. I've just seen people having to do a big tap dance after it. We had a guy recently that was homesick. You know, he was at a summer camp and was homesick and had to talk to a counselor about 12 years old being homesick. And, you know, that popped up. And, you know, it was ridiculous. They thought he was depressed and it was just stupid. He never took any medication for it, but just still somehow it got pinged up. So, but he was able to work his way through it. But that was crazy. Should I run in both shoes and boots while preparing for buds? Yeah, I think you should. I recommend it. There is something to get used to running in boots, not as much as it used to be, like when in the 90s, when you got issued, like for me, I got issued these Vietnam era jungle boots that just sucked. They were horrible shoes, great for jungle stuff, not great for running in. Then the Bates lights came in, the Bates 922, 924s came in. Awesome boots compared to the other ones. Still had to break them in though. So that was reason why you wanted to run them, just breaking them in, but they were much better, much lighter, more like a running boot. And now 20 years later, they use the Nike Combat Gen 2, which is basically a running shoe that looks like a boot. It is that nice. Not much breaking in needs to occur. Some fitting may need to be adjusted. Some people cut out the heel, because it's a hard plastic heel that can start rubbing on you pretty hard. So there are little things that you may have to get used to these new boots to make them work for you. So there you go. So yes, Nike Combat Gen 2. That's what they issue at Buds. Zach, active duty corpsman. What's up, Doc? Who's training for dive school, been struggling with the running portion of the PST. My fastest is 11:14, which is slow. Not sure how to get faster. I run around 15 miles a week. All right, so here's the deal. I have an article here that has some really good running workouts in it. Running plan to help you get to and through selection. Really what this is designed to do is to help you build a faster mile and a half time and a faster 4 mile timed run time. Now, I know Buds is different running standards than Dive School, but it helps you with two paces. It helps you with a 6 minute pace if you want to get to a 6 minute pace. Also helps you with a 7 minute pace. My advice is, since you're at 11:14, is start playing around with the 7 minute pace, which means you're going to try to run your quarter miles at 1:45 and your half miles at 3:30, your miles at 7, right? As you start learning how to run at a 7 minute mile, that's going to translate to a 10:30 mile and a half eventually. And then once that gets easy, start going through the workouts, using the same workouts and just applying it a little bit faster. Maybe a 6:30 pace, maybe even a 6 minute pace if you want to flirt around between 9 and 9:30 on that mile and a half, which I will say this, it's not impossible to do at all. Might take a little longer. I would say it won't take long for you to get to a 7 minute mile pace, but it will take a little longer to get to a 6 minute mile pace. Little less to get to a 6:30. So that is how I would do it. I just put the link in the comment section. Check out that link right there. Now, I will say this is a 20 mile a week workout. Not a bad idea to maybe shoot for 20 miles a week, you know, build up to it, but start off at 15 miles a week. If you want to add in some, you know, and, you know, do this for 15 miles a week. And if you wanted to add in a 5 mile long, slow distance run at the end of the week, just to kind of work some aerobic base, that's fine. If you prefer the non-impact option, just get on a bike for an hour, work your cardio that way with all the cardio benefits minus the impact. So it depends on where you are on your ability to handle those miles. All right, Stu, I struggle to differentiate between pain from soreness and injury pain. Any advice? Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, I'm at that point too right now. Every day, something is not quite pain-free. Like, my knees are feeling it today for some reason. I ran 3 miles, did some legs, felt my knees walking down the steps. So I'm thinking, even though I still did the workout, I probably need to do some mobility work today. So my advice would be to mix in some mobility training work, meaning non-impact cardio, stretch, foam roll, whatever is pain or sore that's bothering you. Hit that area pretty hard. Be religious with that. Do it every day, you know, with some sort of massage or Theragun or foam roller, whatever stretching you need to do to make it feel just a little better. See how that works. Differentiating between it, I would say my way is this. If I do a warm-up and still feel pain, it is more than just stiffness and soreness. It is now something that is borderline pain or injury that I need to deal with. So typically, soreness will go away after a warm-up, maybe even a mile run. If it doesn't, I would call it injury and maybe go a little lighter. I'm walking around at 210. I lift a lot. Should I shed some weight to help with struggling as well? Yeah, I would. I will tell you this. I have been my best at running at a, like, because I'm about that weight. Now, I think I'm about 208 last I checked, but a month ago I was 215. So I can tell you I run much faster at 200, 195, 200. So my advice would be to not lift so much if you're trying to get faster. You can lift upper body if you want, but to be honest with you, to prepare for Dive School, my advice would be to just get in a calisthenics and cardio cycle, drop the lifts for 6 to 8 weeks and improve all those PST numbers and some muscle stamina. And then, you know, as you're going through dive school, you want to add in some lifts or something like that. That's cool. Or after dive school, get back into lifting fully. That way you're preparing for all the hard PTs that you're going to endure at dive school. You're probably strong enough already to handle the log PT and walking around with scuba tanks on. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. But that's where I would go. So, oh, nice to meet you at the blood drive a few years ago. Oh, yeah. Cool, man. Are you still in the area? That was a while back ago. That's probably before COVID, wasn't it? All right, let's see if there's another question in here. Does the Navy have less need for SEALs now, since it looks like, you know, they were at a 10% graduation rate? That's old. I think they've gotten back to their historical attrition rates of 80%, so 20% graduation rate. Since the graduation rate is so low, what happens to the guys that don't make it? What jobs do they get when they do not make it through, quit or fail? Well, I will tell you this, if you don't make it through BUDS, you have a couple options. One, they will roll you and get you healed up if you're sick or injured, if you're a good candidate. That means you haven't failed anything, you've been a good team member, you know, with your boat crew and all that, and they'll let you heal. Rolls happen a lot. Now, if you quit or you get kicked out because you keep failing 4 mile timed runs or 2 mile swims, or you can't pass the underwater or whatever, they will, sometimes they'll roll you on a performance roll, but it really depends. You got to be a really good student in all other areas. However, if they do kick you out, chances are you're going to be at the needs of the Navy. And what that means is, do they need bosun's mates on ships? That's where you're going. If you're a really good candidate and the guys over across the hallway look for BUDS candidates to go EOD, if you're a smart guy, just messed up on something during Hell Week, you know, EOD will take you. And that's a great job. So if you get offered EOD, that means you were a good student in the eyes of the BUDS instructors, as well as people who are looking for good students to go to EOD training, because it's not easy. But unfortunately, most people do not get those opportunities. They might go to dive school. They might go to EOD training. Few have made it over to the SWCC training program because they get a lot of their recruits now from either the fleet or the street as civilians. So you're going to be at the needs of the Navy, likely doing a job that you're not happy with for the next 3 years. If in a year or two you can make it back to BUDS and you want to do that, maybe if the stars align for you, that is possible. Because you have to have your year group that you join the Navy has to be available for people to come back to BUDS. Like, BUDS has to not be fully manned at your year group. Also, the rate that you choose, the job that you choose in the Navy after your BUDS attempt, has to also want to let you go in order to go change your rate back to an SO. A lot of things have to happen. So if that rate is undermanned, they're not going to let you go. So you got to do the rest of your enlistment, which is a total of 4 years, from boot camp to that day, and then decide from there, what do you want to do? Do you want to reenlist with maybe get back to buds, or do you want to get out, come back in? A lot of guys get out, go Army SF. That's another option. Can't tell you how many Navy guys I met at a recent Army Special Forces graduation. Zachary says a lot of buds drops end up going green side corpsman as well. Something that's really good and becoming a SARC, which is a Special Amphibious Recon Corpsman. It's an advanced spec ops medic job. Basically, you're a corpsman working with Marines. You'll go through recon training. You'll go through MARSOC training, you know, depending on what job you're doing in the Marine Corps, which is really cool. But you're a Navy guy working as a corpsman in those jobs, which is awesome. I know a lot of great guys that do that. They love it. Are there 18-year-olds you train that are good to go for buds? Yes. I have seen in recent years 4 18, 19-year-olds that are good to go to get to and through buds. And I will always start off my mentality of saying teenagers shouldn't go to buds because they make up a majority of the attrition rate. However, you have to prove me wrong in that training. Like, you're crushing the PST, you're able to ruck, you're able to swim 2 miles with fins, you're a little more mature than the average 18-year-old kid. All those things matter. And I will be honest with you, the last 1, 2, 3, 4 18-year-olds that worked out with us are solid candidates. 100% solid. Most of them are wrestlers who could swim. One of them was just a man child who, 18 years old, came in with like a beard and mustache, massive 6'3", 210. He was a man child, perfectly capable of getting to and through buds. Let's see, what's your recommendation, squat and bench press before going to buds? You know, that doesn't really matter. I don't really have a big recommendation for that. I just recommend doing them. Squats, deadlift, bench press, you should have a foundation of some kind of strength under your belt, just so you're a little more durable, handle boats and logs. But, you know, if you look at my assessment tool article, you'll see where I'll have guys doing 1.5 times their body weight in squats and deadlifts for multiple reps, sometimes 2 times their body weight, depending on their pound for pound strength. And, you know, body weight bench up to double digits, 10 to 20 repetitions. So I'm not looking for 1 rep maxes, to be honest with you. How does the underwater swim work? Is it one and done event? Yeah, underwater swim is just a 50-meter underwater swim. You jump in feet first. You can't kick off the wall. You have to do a front flip. Then you swim 25 meters. You turn around at the wall, you can kick off that wall and come back and you're done. I will tell you this, a lot of people sweat the 50-meter underwater swim, but we had 100 people still in our class the day we took the 50-meter underwater swim. We started with 120. By day 4, we had 100. And I was like, oh, this would be a fun little test, a percentage, let's say. So for every person that didn't make it, we'll say underwater swim for our buds class was blank percentage passes. We didn't have a single person fail that test. And it wasn't unusual. Like, while I was there and classes that I was monitoring while I was still in, you know, maybe one, a class, two max, people didn't pass the underwater swim. So it's not one of those things that people fail often. I have only met one person out of a bunch of people that have gone to BUDS and made it through BUDS that have failed it. One person. I'm waiting to see if I pick up a contract as we speak. Last test, 842, 91, 72, 21, 924. Yeah, solid. You should be able to pick up a contract with those scores. I was trying to find info on class dates this year. Is there anywhere specific to look? You know what? I think they're a little bit awkward this year, primarily because of the holiday and the 12-week change to prep. That's changed a few things. I don't know if that jumbled up the schedule, but I know there are people who are going there now, post-Thanksgiving, between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and they won't start until after the holiday, until January. And that's starting prep. So 12 weeks later, that's going to be a BUDS class. So I'm sure there will be a BUDS class full of people that are in prep now that might be starting BUDS in the first of the year, but I don't know. Somebody has that information. I do not. Let's see. I played rugby growing up, but if I couldn't do it, if I could do it all over again, I would wrestle and swim or play water polo. No, I mean, I love rugby and I love football and I loved it growing up. I also wrestled for 3 years. Which was enough, I think, to learn a little bit of something about toughness. And I grew up in Florida, so swimming was kind of like what everybody did, but it wasn't, I didn't swim competitively. But I've seen some people who wrestle and swim be really squared away candidates, both pound for pound toughness, pound for pound strength, endurance, muscle stamina, you know, all those things that make you a good candidate at BUDS can be found in wrestling and swimming for sure. You got to add in some running in there too. Most wrestlers do. But I like water polo players because they are tough. They're basically wrestlers who swim because they are kicking each other's ass under the water, which is impressive. Plus, they're the professional treading team for sure. But I will say this, you know, a lot of swimmers and water polo players get stress fractures just because they don't run enough. So they need to do some off-season strength training and running just so they work on that weakness that tends to occur when you hang out in zero gravity for most of the day. You're just not durable enough to handle a lot of the impact forces of running and rucking and other load-bearing activities. So there's some weaknesses that come with any sport. For football, I will tell you it was endurance. That was a hard one. Should I be lifting weights when training for BUDS? Depends. I've been running 3 times a week with calisthenics, pull-up, push-up, sit-ups, those 3 days. And then focusing on weight training the other 3. That's not really the best way to do it. My recommendation is to, if you're trying to master a PST, let's do a cals and cardio cycle. Focus on pull-up, push-up, sit-ups 3 days a week, but also on the days in between, instead of lifting, do running and squats and lunges and other calisthenics that work muscle stamina on the legs. So you're going to need muscle stamina. You're going to need strength too. But if you're trying to get really good at a PST, my advice is don't do any guessing and just follow this program, because that thing works. That will get you there. If you're kind of new to the calisthenics and cardio world, boom, right there. Then once you've crushed all the PST events, it's easy to maintain those events, then work on some strength training. Like I started this whole podcast about doing endurance training first, then strength training second. There's a whole study on it that really shows people are improving their performance in both muscle growth and strength by doing endurance first, then a resistance cycle. And you can do some different training, like this winter lift cycle here can help you add the weights that you need to get bigger and stronger, but there's also calves and cardio in there to help you maintain all of those gains that you've created from the calves and cardio cycle prior to it. So it's a different type of programming that you want to do. This isn't like 3 months before football season starts and you start lifting, right? This may take 6 to 10, maybe even 12 months to fully prepare. I've seen guys take 18 months, 2 years to fully prepare for buds because they had such a weakness. They might have had some great strengths with powerlifting or whatever, but they had a corresponding running, swimming, high rep calisthenic weakness that had to be developed, and that took time. Could be the same thing. An endurance guy who has no strength needs to be spending some time in the weight room getting stronger. So my advice is start on your weakness and go there. If you're already strong, don't worry about lifting. I didn't lift for literally 18 months before I went to Buds because I needed to focus on my endurance and calisthenics. But I had lifted for 10 years before I went to Buds. Thoughts on the BOSU ball leg work where you put weight on the ball and put it on your head to simulate boats on. I wouldn't necessarily worry about that. We do a couple of things. We run with sandbags on our shoulders and sandbags on our head for just a little bit. But there's an article I wrote about it to prepare for boats on heads. Boats on heads, Stu Smith. How to strengthen your neck for carrying boats on heads. You don't necessarily have to do it with a compressive force, like straight down like a boat, right? You can do it a little smarter as well. So, yeah, check out that article I just posted on there. Thanks, Stu, for all you do. Sounds like you've helped a ton of guys through selection. Well, let me just say this. I don't help anybody through selection. I have trained thousands of people who have made it through selections. But I don't help anybody make it through selection. I'm not holding anybody's hand. They are gritting that out themselves. They have to answer that question when they are cold, wet, sandy, hungry, tired, whatever, when their mind says, why are you doing this to yourself? They have to have that answer to why they continue. Has nothing to do with me. So, yes, I have prepared many people to get to that journey, and many people are successful. It's well over probably 1,500. But I really haven't done the math anymore. You know, I remember keeping track, you know, send 30 guys and 30 guys make it. I was all pumped. And then, you know, over the years, I've just kind of lost track. But I've been doing it for 25 years. So, you know, a lot of people come through here. Diet recommendation. Yes, eat for energy and recovery. I'm going to give you this article because since you didn't put any effort into a question, I'm going to put this much effort into the answer. And it's an article. Read that article. As you transition from strength to an endurance athlete, how did you get to a point of loving distance running? What internal monologue goes through your mind if you're doing distance. You know what? That's funny because I wrote an article, 40 years of hating running. Oh, 35 years. I think I wrote this a few years ago. Check out this article because it's pretty funny. It's an article about me hating running for 35 years. But no, I guess, you know, it was at first it really sucked because you're working on a weakness that you're not good at doing. And you've spent 10 years of your athletic life mastering techniques to be better at lifting and sprinting and, you know, football and rugby and stuff like that. And then you start doing more running and swimming and calisthenics and all of those things that you're just not good at doing. And the workouts are took me back to when I was 12 years old picking up my first barbell. But I think it was also kind of refreshing. You know, there's part of my body that was like, okay, I've kind of taken my strength to what I think is probably my capabilities at the time. And let's work on something else, because I was definitely weak at these things. And it was more of a mental and physical challenge than anything else. So I guess that was my mindset going in versus having to have an internal monologue. But no, I never really enjoyed it. James, if you had 1 minute to give advice to a candidate about to go in, what would be your hurried advice to an individual? Elevator pitch of advice per se. You know, James, that is one of my favorite questions ever. I may have to write something on that one, because here it is. My advice is I would do it all over again. I would highly recommend you focusing on why you want to do this and have a good answer and quick way to summon that answer when things are going poorly, because I promise you, you're going to be sitting in the surf zone, the day has turned to the evening, and it's not even hell week, and you're wondering, like, when is this day going to end? And you're cold, you're wet, you're tired, you're hungry, and you're sandy, and you just don't see an end to it. So you have to have an answer for when that part of your brain says, hey, what are you doing this for? Why do you want to do this? You better have an answer. I don't know what that answer is. It could be as simple as, you know, you want to serve your country, right? That's a classic, right? And you want to serve your country with guys that are better than you and smarter than you and more fit than you. And you just want to be in the same room with those guys, you know, because that's what it's going to be. So, but my number one thing is I just tell people I'm excited for you. I would do it all over again and just take one day at a time and even break that down to one meal at a time. Some people even break it down to one evolution at a time and go there, not just to like survive it, go there and compete to win events every single day, win something. 'Cause that is kind of like that big dopamine hit of like, woohoo. And you're pumped up for the next competition. A little saying that I've used over the years is you never think about quitting if you think about winning. And I still use that every single day in my life. And one thing I learned going through Hell Week is that your body is 10 times stronger than your mind will ever let it be. So remember that. Disengage that thinking part of the brain whenever you are really feeling crappy, because it's there to help you survive but you got to turn it off and just keep going, keep moving, keep getting cold, because cold sucks, especially when you're warm. How many miles a week do you recommend running to train for buds? I heard anywhere from 60 to 70. Some say 15 miles a week. Curious, hear your thoughts on your 25 years of coaching. I typically go somewhere between 30 and 40. In fact, guess what? You can Google that question, put my name in the search, and guess what pops up? An article that says, in fact, the title of this article is called "How Many Miles Per Week Should You Run Before Buds or Other Selection Programs?" Full article on that topic. Check it out. Stu, what was your why that got you through that training? Well, first of all, I didn't have a plan B, right? My plan B was I was going to have to serve my 5 years that I owed the Navy on a surface ship, and I did not want to do that. So, one, I had no other option. And two, I really wanted to prove some people wrong, because I had some, we'll call them friends, that said, no way I'd make it through. So that was part of my mindset. And plus, I just wanted to serve. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I knew I wanted to serve. I just didn't know what capacity I wanted to serve. And then after meeting some SEALs and seeing what they're like and their mentality is like and all the people who are preparing to go to those jobs, you know, people that were a few years ahead of me, I saw what they were like. And I was like, I want to be like that. You know, I want to be that motivated, that dedicated to a goal. You know, just like I was, you know, trying to get into the Naval Academy, I was dedicated to that. I wanted that feeling again to get not only to the training, but through the training. And yeah, that was it. Plus, I just knew that I wanted to serve with those type of people. And, you know, it's so impressive when you go into a room of them and you know that you're nowhere near the smartest or the fittest person in the room, but you're still in the room. And you've earned it just like everybody else in that room. That was big. That was a big why. I left the double arm pull and the dolphin kick and started seeing faster times. Should I toss it out the window for good, or should I eventually add it back in? It seems to have a lot of advantages for people. My advice is this, because here's the double arm pull. The double arm pull adds a stroke. It still counts as a stroke to get across the pool, but it takes away a breath. So if you're not in shape to handle that one less breath per length for 20 lengths of a pool swim, you might want to take it out, right? But if you can get in shape to handle that breaststroke pull out, add it in, because it is more efficient. As long as you can, you know, make that transition from the pull out to the first stroke and not lose momentum, then I say keep it, right? But if you lose momentum making that transition, or you're getting more winded because you're doing the breaststroke pull out, chances are you're going to get slower because your heart rate is increased, mainly because of that one less breath per length. Makes a huge difference. So it really kind of depends on your swimming conditioning. But I had a guy the other day who took it out and added 50, or subtracted 50 seconds from his swim time. So that's how bad he was doing the breaststroke pullout, put it that way. Have you trained older candidates 25 plus? Yes, absolutely. To enter different special operations pipelines. Yes, I've had Army SF, had a 30-year-old, 34-year-old get through buds. Had a 38-year-old go through the SF and PJ pipeline. Whole bunch of stuff. 50-year-old firefighters. All types. Did you see a higher washout rate with older candidates? No. Compared to the teenage candidate, it is night and day. Teenagers will drop the ball quicker than an older candidate. Now, I will say this. It tends to bell curve with age, right? So there's a, and this is like who makes it, right? So you're a little younger on this side, probably not going to make it. You're a little bit in that 20 to 25 range. Probably a bulk of the class is in that 20 to 25 range. And then you got, you know, 27 and older. Not that they don't tend to make it, is that there's just not many of them. But the ones that do tend to make it compared to the teens that do not. A majority of your class will be teenagers on day one. When you graduate, a majority of your class will be 22-year to 25-year age group. All right. Wow. Been going a little bit longer than I thought, but I started earlier. So I have to get out of here at 10:30. I got a laundry list of stuff I need to do today, but I do appreciate you guys sticking around. So I'm going to answer this one question. No more questions, because this is kind of like what I started off with. Do you think it's a good idea to do endurance and weight training first if you need to lose a little weight before starting calisthenics? I mean, you do what you need to, but eventually you're going to need to do a calisthenic cycle, right? Endurance and weight training is great. Calisthenics and cardio is great, you know, to do that. My advice is just get moving. So one more. All right. So Don says he has strong cardio due to swimming competitively for 8 years, and I'm okay in weight training, 225, wondering if I should continue doing both or focus more on cardio cals. I have 2 years till I go. If you have 2 years till you go, learn what seasonal tactical fitness periodization is all about, because that will guide you with each season being a different focus that you need to not ignore, right? Because this one here, speed, power, strength, agility, all part of the winter lift cycle, the spring summer lift cycle, or running cals and cardio cycle, endurance, muscle stamina, running, rucking, swimming, all of those. Focus on that. And you just go through the year. Each season is a different focus. And it makes it easy for you to not ignore things that you should not ignore. A lot of people will ignore, like in your question, you're ignoring, you know, speed and agility work. You're ignoring, you know, squats and deadlifts. Right. I don't know. Right. So it's just one of those things that it's all in there. Right. And you can at least use it as a guide. Learn about seasonal tactical fitness periodization. In fact, I want you to read this, especially if you're wondering what to do. You got 3 years or 2 years or more than 6 months to train. You know, you can answer all of your strengths and weaknesses just by understanding how to balance it all into a smart program where you see gains in every phase versus you get stronger and then you get faster and have more endurance and you get weaker, right? Instead of jumping up and down like that because you're not lifting anymore, you get weak. With the block periodization model, you can avoid all of that. You guys keep asking questions. Justin says, took your advice on the honey packet peanut butter before hard cardio workouts. Big game changer. Absolutely. Hey, last question, as I like this one. I came home on leave, found out my girlfriend's been seeing someone else. Advice. Yeah, dump her. She doesn't deserve you anyway. Move on. Plenty of fish in the sea, my friend. Plenty of fish in the sea. Go be single. Enjoy it. Yeah, you don't need women bringing you down when you're going through selection. Screw that. Use that energy for getting mean, getting through training, getting tough. Because here's the deal. You're going to be going through selection, and there's a time when you're going through training where you can't get stronger, you can't get faster. You just have to get tougher and get through it. And, yeah, screw her, man. Her loss. Move on. All right, folks. I got to go. I'll be back tomorrow. We'll do some CSS critiques. Should be a good one. I got a bunch of CSS critiques over Thanksgiving Day weekend. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving Day weekend yourself. And we'll extend this through the holidays and keep crushing. I'll see you guys tomorrow.